decades tuned to yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden years. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Adventure coming up in this hour from two programs. Later on, it's Escape from 1950. But right now, an episode of Horatio Hornblower. This first heard on the CBS Radio Network on February 13th, 1953.
Into it, if you please, Captain Bush.
Pointers on target. Linstocks ready.
Aye, aye, sir. Ready.
Fire!
Presenting Michael Redgrave as C.S. Forrester's Indomitable Man of the Sea, Horatio Hornblower.
Brazenly into a Russian port had been a gamble. Yet my orders from the Admiralty had stated two objectives. Impress the Russians and the Swedes with Britain's naval strength and ingenuity, and at the same time, bring them into the war on our side, if you can. Orders which might, of course, prove somewhat contradictory on occasion. So, once we'd entered Kronstadt Harbor, the Tsar himself had come aboard, incognito. Even though he hadn't once admitted his identity, I'd hoped he'd been impressed with the fine show we'd staged for him. My old comrade, Captain Bush, was still puzzling about all this the next morning on our quarterdeck.
Sir, was it actually the Tsar himself? Are you quite sure?
Why, yes, of course I'm sure.
But all that talk about the Comte du Nord, they themselves call the visitor that, sir.
Mm-hmm. He's merely a name he uses when he's traveling. Oh, Bush, what an old skeptic you've become. I say, look shoreward, Bush, that smart little lugger with the insignia. Now, perhaps our answer's on the way. Mr. Hurst! Sail-bearing quarters from the shore.
Aye, aye, sir, I noticed.
Well, let me know when the moment she's alongside, Mr. Hurst. If she carries the messenger, make him welcome.
Aye, aye, sir, see you in a moment, sir.
Your clerk seems interested, too, sir. Over there, at the starboard rail. He's just come from below.
Oh, Sauger, you mean. He's a peculiar fellow, there. Did you know he was a Finn? He calls himself a man without a country now because of what the Russians did to Finland.
Do you like him, sir?
What do you mean? Oh, you don't, eh?
Well, sir,
he's a bit shifty. You're right. It amuses me, the Admiralty, posting him to help me win the Russians over. Oh, well. Well, at least he speaks all these weird Baltic tongues. Yes, Mr. Hurst?
Lugger alongside, sir. Bizarre officer aboard, bringing you this letter, sir. He'll wait for your answer.
Thank you, Mr. Hurst. Give him a drink of rum or something.
Aye, aye, sir.
What did I tell you, Bush? Ah, look at that coat of arms, will you? Imperial Palace of Peterhof. Oh, yes, in French. I am bidden to dine with His Imperial Majesty and His Royal Highness, the Prince of Sweden, this afternoon at 4:00. Oh. Accompanied by my staff. The officer who conveys this letter will serve as guide. Ah, Mr. Mond. Oh, tell me. Would you care to dine with the Tsar this afternoon?
What, sir?
His Imperial Majesty, the Tsar of all the Russias, mind. At Peterhof, his palace on the Iranian-bound shore over there, at 4:00.
Sir, But I'm a mere lieutenant, sir.
I think you need a little change. You still look a bit seedy. This preposterous oriental document mentions a staff. Well, we must create one, since Captain Bush will stay here with the squadron. Now, who do you suggest besides yourself?
Well, sir, I'm deeply honored and excited. You will need Mr. Sorger, I expect.
Sorger?
The clerk, sir. Wasn't he posted as your interpreter?
Yes, he was. Now, just why they saddle me with that glum fellow? Oh, yes, we must have him along, of course. Then Hurst must go as first lieutenant, protocol, and one midshipman. Which one, Mount?
Sir, Summers is the brightest, if I may say so.
Well, the fat one? Well, very good. Summers it is. Well, please pass the word to him as you return to change your clothes. Dress uniforms, of course. We must be off in, half an hour.
I shall be ready, sir. And thank you, sir.
Peterhof Palace definitely was not near the water. We docked amid saluting grenadiers in monstrous bearskins, and then were ushered into carriages in which we drove for what seemed miles and miles past parks and terraced lawns and marble fountains. I couldn't help thinking how much my dear wife Barbara would enjoy all this. And at every turn, there were sentries on guard, stiffly presenting arms as we whirled by.
Oh, there now at last. The Peterhof. Just round the next curve, you see.
Richwood's casual remark about assassination had turned my thoughts uneasily back to Sorger and that pistol. I remembered the man's brooding hatred of Russia, his bitter sense of oppression. And suddenly, great heavens, why hadn't it occurred to me before? Could it be? Could he intend it? Here I grew cold. As we drew up before the palace and were met by swarms of liveried footmen, I contrived to have a word alone with Mound, who, with Sorger and the others, had occupied another carriage. Of all my company, I felt Mound was the most reliable. So you see what I mean, eh, Mound?
I do see, sir. Of course. Quite shocking, sir.
A member of my own ship's company, my own clerk. It's inconceivable, isn't it? Oh, well, perhaps I'm imagining the whole thing.
I hope so, sir.
Well, help me keep an eye on him. It looks as if there'll be a crush of people. Now, watch out. Here he comes now. Who's this with him, with all the gold lace?
Please, you have the kindness to accompany me, Sir Hornblower.
I trust that I see you in good health, Sir Commodore Hornblower.
Thank you. I'm in the best of health, Your Excellency.
And your squadron, which I had the pleasure of visiting but yesterday, in company with the Comte Dunon.
My squadron's in the best of health, too, Excellency.
Yesterday, aboard your flagship, we discussed very briefly this man Bonaparte, his policies.
Yes.
It was, I believe, your opinion that his troops might constitute a real threat to Russia.
Might, sir? I fear it's less conditional than that. Bonaparte overran Swedish Pomerania the other day. Sent 50,000 troops in the moment he got news of our appearance in the Baltic.
Yes. Prince Bernadotte of Sweden is here even now. This evening he'll be conferring with his Imperial Majesty.
Yes, I had heard so. Now, sir, Bonaparte now controls the entire Baltic coast, right to the Russian frontiers. That would be most convenient to him in one particular event, in the event of his deciding to attack you.
Perhaps you are right. And yet, you know, we've had a treaty with him.
Oh, Bonaparte respects no treaties, Excellency. And now he's taken Pomerania, there's no base for an attack on his rear. He can march an army against St. Petersburg with no fear of it being cut off anywhere.
Perhaps. There are so many considerations, pro and con. For us, it promises to be a very difficult decision.
Then what Your Excellency is saying to me is that...
Commodore, I am merely advising patience. Since there is no decision yet by those responsible for higher policies, I did not wish you to draw premature conclusions, nor to be over hasty in communicating with your government. That was why I asked to see you privately. We must not seek to hasten the slow steps of history. And now, if I detain you longer, you'll be late for the imperial reception. There are lovely ladies waiting to meet you. They will soon erase that troubled frown of yours, I am certain. Your dinner partner, sir. It's arranged. Most charming lady. The Countess Kanyarin. Countess, may I present Commodore Sir Horatio Hornblower of His Britannic Majesty's Royal Navy?
It is the greatest of pleasures, sir.
Delighted.
As a distinguished stranger, Commodore, you will take precedence immediately after the Persian ambassador, His Excellency Gorzakhan. And now, if you'll excuse me, there are other guests I have to welcome at this reception.
Observe closely, my friend, and you will see the Prince of Sweden enter with His Imperial Majesty, our Tsar.
Then suddenly I did see Soga. He stood quite unobtrusively at one end of the gallery beside a pillar. But there was something in his attitude, fierce inner intensity that froze my blood. Alexander had conquered Finland. Prince Bernadotte had condoned the act, and there stood Soga, hating both of them. I turned abruptly from the Countess and found the gallery stairs. I had to push my way through a dense crowd. Where was Mound? I might need help.
Oh, there you are, sir. Well, nothing's gone amiss, sir. I've kept you in sight pretty steadily.
Now, don't be a fool, ma'am. Look at him now. Come, follow me. Hurry. I felt an agony of suspense now. It was almost impossible to move through the packed onlookers, all standing there gaping at the celebrities below.
Oh,
excuse me. Your pardon, ma'am. I'm sorry, madam, please. Your pardon, sir. Come, ma'am, hurry. And there stood Soga by his pillar, so absorbed he didn't even notice our approach. His hand went to his waistband beneath his coat. He was drawing my pistol.
Shall I shoot, sir?
No, don't. Can't cause a commotion. There's just one way, one silent way. My sword. Stand back. I whipped my sword out of its scabbard. I couldn't afford to miss my mark at the first stroke. Slashed quickly at the wrist that held the pistol. With tendon severed, the man's fingers opened nervelessly. The gun fell heavily to the carpet, and Soga turned in open-mouthed surprise, staring first at the spurting blood, and then at me, venomously. All right, Soga, that does it. Make one more move, and you'll feel the blade somewhere else. Observe, it's pointed at your heart. Well, is there anything to say, Soga?
No, Commodore. I have nothing to say.
Now take the pistol, man. Look after him. Tie that wrist up. Get him out somehow. Nobody's noticed yet. They're all much too absorbed in their precious royalties down there.
I'll find Somersonhurst. We can stow him somewhere.
Oh, good lad, good lad. Sorry, but I've got to get back down below. Act the untroubled emissary from Old England.
Don't worry, sir. I'll see he causes no more trouble if I have to sit on his thick head all the afternoon.
Ah, welcome back, Sir Commodore.
I'm extremely sorry, Countess. I had no intention.
It was a great haste you showed in leaving me, monsieur. I couldn't help but think I had offended you.
Oh, no, nothing like that. You see,
never mind. I have forgiven you already. And please do not look so austere.
But see, here come the royal party. They make the tour of the great company, speaking a word to each. The Grand Marshal will soon present you to His Imperial Majesty.
I've already met... No, my mistake. I wonder, is the Comte du Nord not to be here too this afternoon?
The Comte du Nord? I do not know him.
Your Imperial Majesty, this is Commodore Sir Horatio Hornblower.
Your Imperial Majesty?
His Royal Highness, the Prince of Sweden.
Your Royal Highness?
Imperial Majesty, your Royal Highness.
It is a privilege to meet Commodore Hornblower, of whom I have heard so much. Indeed, we have all heard of his exploits.
Oh, your Majesty is much too kind.
We appreciate your dining here with us today, Commodore.
It struck me as odd, everyone standing up to dine. But then, one shouldn't question others' customs. The long tables literally groaned with food of all descriptions. Though it was quite odd, too. Perhaps I appeared a trifle mystified, especially when some gray, unappetizing-looking stuff was handed us by a footman. So the Countess came to my rescue.
That is caviar. Try. You will approve, I think.
And what's this in the glass? It looks like water.
No. It is not water, you'll discover. Vodka, Commodore. Vodka, the drink of the people.
Yes, very interesting. this other stuff, this caviar.
Delicious. It's
truly delicious. You know, it seems a bit unusual to a stranger to eat standing up, but you know, this is one of the jolliest parties I ever attended, Countess. Laughter, bright lights, beautiful women, music. Oh,
You know, I'm feeling quite exhilarated. And that innocuous-looking transparent stuff, what did you call it?
Vodka, Commodore.
Yes, everyone here seems to toss it down in quantity. Most casually, I must say. Yes, I've been some time at sea, you know. It's a different kind of life. And then all this sort of thing. Well, you know, a bit harsh compared with this.
I'm sure.
Well, I think I'll have some more of that salad and some cheese. It's extremely good. Thank you.
Your Highness, your Excellency, ladies and gentlemen, dinner is served.
Oh, by all the... How many courses, Count?
Don't be concerned. At least you've now discovered you like Russian preliminaries. I shall gladly advise you on which courses to neglect.
Ah, you have a kind heart, madame.
Oh, yes. Do pictures interest monsieur very much?
Pictures?
Yes. Painting.
Oh, yes, certainly.
The picture gallery of this palace is considered very fine. This evening after dinner, I could show it to you. Unless, of course, you would prefer to join the card players.
Oh, no, I'd much prefer to see pictures, Countess.
After the royal party has withdrawn, if you are by the door on the far side, I shall show you the way.
That would be delightful, madame.
My husband, the Count, used to be quite interested in pictures. I married him as a mere child. But after all, he is now quite elderly. He has lost interest in them, I'm afraid.
Just as we rose and left the dining hall, Mann slipped up to outside the doors.
I thought you'd want to know, sir. We had him in a side room up aloft.
Yes, good. Knew I could trust you, Mann.
He fainted with the loss of blood. We had to use a tourniquet, half of my shirt. Summers and Hurst are guarding him.
Anyone find out about it, Mann?
No, sir. Nobody saw us go.
Good.
I poured some liquor on his coat, and from the smell of him, anyone will think he's drunk. We'll smuggle him out somehow. But, sir, the sooner we get him away, the better, sir.
Yes, you're right. I don't think we can hurry off at once. No, hold the fort, Mann. We'll have to stay here another hour at least. Courtesy demands it.
But, sir, I thought, just as you say.
Here you are, Commodore. I've waited, as you see.
I said you had a kind heart, Countess Camerin.
The Italian pictures of the Cinquecento are in the farthest gallery. But perhaps you'd care to see the more modern ones first. Their gallery isn't quite so well lighted.
Unfortunately, it's just come to me that... Well, I must return to my ship with the others. Yes, I'm afraid in times like these, you know, so many duties weighing heavily.
Indeed. And it is only now that you remember them?
Well, I must. Thank you so very much for your great kindness to an awkward guest and also for your friendliness. For me today, the Russians are the most delightful people in the world, but I must be getting back aboard my ship. Dearest Barbara, dearest wife, I've only just returned from a rather extraordinary day at the Tsar's court. You would have been amused, I think, to see me determined to uphold the dignity of Britain amid all that gold lace and pomp and circumstance. A most amazing people, these Russians. Highly ambiguous as to their intentions in this war, yet going some lengths today to show me friendliness and sympathy. Oh, yes, there was a rather attractive little country, sir. I forget her exact name, who for a time made herself especially amiable in showing courtesy to us strangers. None of them here, however, can begin to compare with our English women, either in appearance or deportment. Just when we shall move out of Kronstadt Harbor, I'm not quite sure yet. I miss you so very much tonight. I send you all my love. Remember that. Your most obedient husband, Horatio. Thank you.
Pinocchio Hornblower, starring Michael Redgrave, is based on the novels by C.S. Forrester. Music composed and conducted by Sidney Torch. Produced by Harry Allen Towers.
Horatio Hornblower, on Tuned to Yesterday from February 13, 1953 on CBS. Revered actor Michael Redgrave was the star of that program and one of the relatively few times he was heard on American radio. In 1948, he was heard in two dramatic performances on the CBS program Studio One, also guest starred on The Eddie Cantor Show in the same year. And a few weeks after that guest spot appearance, he was the narrator for the CBS Symphony Orchestra's world premiere of The Creation by Lehman Engel, who conducted the broadcast. You're listening to An Hour of Adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for Escape with the story Port Royal, this March 10th, 1950 broadcast heard on CBS.
Tired of the everyday routine? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all?
We offer you Escape! Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight, we escape to a sunken city, which lies with its fabulous treasure chests at the bottom of the sea, and to the lust for gold of a crew of men who were willing to die or to kill. As Gildout tells it in his exciting tale, Port Royal, a story suggested by Lieutenant Harry Riesberg's book, I Dive for Treasure.
To get anything else on that radio?
I happen to like that particular number.
Well, like it somewhere else.
I just might do that.
Oh, no, Crystal, I didn't mean it. I guess I'm just jumpy tonight. Here, come on, have a drink.
Of that stuff? No, thanks.
Well, pardon me, Lady Asterbilt. We're just fresh out of Napoleon brandy.
Huh, aren't we just?
Look, you got no beef coming. When I had it, you got it. The works.
And when you didn't have it, you took it from me. Hucked the diamonds, sold the mink.
So you'll get them back. Something's got to turn up.
It should be you, dead.
Look, baby, don't do me no favors. The door's not locked, you know.
I know. And I think I'm going to walk through it right now.
Oh, no, wait a minute.
It's a break for you, Danny. Now you can keep the room single rate.
Where you going?
I think Benny can still find me a place in the line over at the Flamingo.
You wouldn't.
Just watch me.
All right, go on. Kick a guy when he's down. Walk all over him. I should have known you was that kind of broad.
You did.
Let her go, the tramp. She's like the rest of the crumbums. When you're up, you're Danny Quinn, everybody's friend. When the horses don't run your way, you're nobody. Let her go. Hadn't always been like it was that night. And it would be different again. How soon, I wasn't sure, when a fist landed on my door. A fist that was made from the hand that had jimmied some of the best windows in New York.
Hey, Danny, it's Carl.
It ain't locked. What's on your mind?
Hi, Danny. Hey, plenty. Where's the broad?
She took a powder.
Permanent?
Looks like.
Oh, well, you're better off.
Maybe.
Hey, look, I picked up something pretty good tonight, I think.
I'm not in the market.
Oh, now, look, Danny, this don't mean a thing to you till I get through talking. Now, listen to me, will you? Now, this could be worth anywhere to a couple of million bucks.
Look, Carl, get off it. Whatever it is, get off of it.
All right. Now, you probably never heard of a guy named Fletcher Travis, because you never get past the page with the race results. See what I mean? Me, I'm different. I case this town through the papers. I keep myself up on what's going on in town and who's in town and how I can get to it. Now, look, this Travis made himself a lot of dough breaking in the sunken boat. You understand? He's what you call a deep sea dive.
Yeah.
All right, you was a sailor once. You ought to know.
Let me see that thing.
Yeah, sure. So, I read up what he was up to, and then this afternoon I went to the place where he's giving a talk, see? Now, it's a sunken city down in Jamaica. The island, not the track. And they call it Port Royal. There's warehouses down there with gold by the ton. Travis was all ready with a boat to go down after it, leaving tomorrow.
You believe all that?
Well, sure I do. Anyway, he holds up this chart and says, "This is the pass key to get him in," or something like that. So I tail him back to the hotel, I make his room number, and go in while he's eating his dinner. Well, he's got a lot of books there, history books. It's all true, Danny. I ain't kidding you. Now, this is a place for them old pirates. So, anyways, an earthquake or something spilled into the water. You understand what I mean? All in one piece, intact. And that stuff is there. Now, we got this chart. That's the key.
What do we do, frame it?
Look, you was in the Merchant Marine, wasn't you? So you headed up. Now, I got a fur shop staked out that'll get us the first money. Then we buy a boat, get ourselves a diver of our own, and we go after this haul ourselves.
You know, you got something, Carl. Hey, behind you in the dresser, top drawer. See if my Siemens papers are there.
Okay, Danny, okay. Where are they? I don't see them.
Right in the back.
Huh?
There! Oh. You little jerk. There's a difference between being a gambler and a second story man. I know what to do with that old chart if there was anything to it. But what I would do would be legal. I'll let Carl wake up by himself and read the stories about his job in the late finals. They printed enough to make me pretty sure that the dope on this sunken city, Port Royal, was on the level.
Millions.
So after the police cleared out of his hotel, I went calling on Fletcher Travis.
Who is it?
My name's Danny Quinn, and I got something that belongs to you.
Danny Quinn?
Yeah, that's right. I was with some friends slumming in the Bowery. I read about you in the papers, and when I heard this guy talking about you and a chart he'd just stolen, Well, here it is.
Well, come in. Well, I can hardly believe it. Well, this chart
is... Yeah. I heard from this guy. It sounded pretty important. I caught up with the guy on the way out and roughed him up a little.
Well, I don't know how to thank you. This chart
is... Wait a minute. Look, it's easy to thank me. I want to cut in on this deal. I want to go with you on the trip.
You go with us?
Well, sure. It's in the cards. I told you, I read about you in the papers. I was interested then. Now this happens like fate. I run into the chance to get this chart back to you. Look, I'm important to you. Very important.
Well, I realize what I owe you, but a salvage
voyage... Look, I got the answer to that one, too. I was in the Merchant Marine. I'm a real deep-water sailor. I can't swim. Now, could you have made it without me, Travis?
No. I guess I couldn't.
It was quite a feeling heading out into the big Atlantic swell. The rigging sang. The deck beneath me took an angle to port, and it rose and fell. For a second, my imagination took a turn. I got a picture of Danny Quinn standing on another deck, wearing earrings with a cutlass or two and a brace of pistols in his belt. Danny Quinn sailing out after a pirate treasure.
I thought it would be a good idea if we all got together tonight, gentlemen, since according to Captain Matson's estimate, we'll be over Port Royal early tomorrow morning. You're still holding to that, Captain?
The barometer hasn't lied to me yet, Mr. Travis. Tells me this weather's holding. That means we should drop anchor an hour or maybe two after dawn.
Good. Then it's time to look at the chart that Danny recovered for us. There. The city of Port Royal, submerged. After a geodetic survey made by the British Navy, 1826... Now, look here. See the sudden jump in fathoms along this line, right here?
Yeah, I see. It's shallow here and deeper here.
Yeah, that's right. It's a fault line that buckled when the city was destroyed by earthquake. this section sank and this section lifted. Now, see here? A point of reef, rock of coral that shows a wash during low water.
Yeah.
Well, I've oriented this chart with the old maps of Port Royal before its destruction. Now, that point of reef is no more than 90 feet from the edge of the warehouse section. That's right out here.
Are you sure of that?
Well, sure as I can be.
Shush. What made me pick that night to go to the Bowery? You couldn't ask for a better landmark.
Well, no, it's more than a landmark, Captain. It's a mooring. We get a bow hawser on the reef point, back off 90 feet, drop the stern hook, and we're anchored right over the front doors of those treasure houses, 30 fathoms down.
When you've gambled for a living as many years as I have, you develop a set of nerves that do pretty much what you tell them. But when I realized what that old chart meant and how close we were to all that loot, my poker face flew right out the porthole. We made jokes about Fort Knox and the Vanderbilts. We slapped backs, had a round or two, and then we hit our bunks. But I'll lay you 10-1 that all of us did our dreaming wide awake. I know I didn't. Millions of dollars. 30 fathoms under our keel. We were like men in a daze when we set about our work the next morning, but it went the way it should. The point of reef was there at low water. The ship was secured to it, backed off, and anchored. The lifting gear was rigged to the mainmast. The pump and compressor were checked a dozen times. Travis got into his heavy canvas suit. The helmet went over his head. Little afternoon, he began his first dive. I was on the intercom on deck.
What's my depth now?
Hold on, I'll get it. He wants his depth, Captain.
Here comes 25 fathoms. Now.
You're at 25 fathoms, Travis.
Good. It'll be safe to go down at this speed. No faster.
This speed is okay, Captain. No faster.
All right.
How is it, Travis?
Good. Conditions are good. There's enough light. Great blue light. No sign of any trouble. My air is adequate. No sign of any large fishes yet.
Travis.
Yes? What is it?
Well, you make me nervous when you aren't talking. Keep saying things, will you? What do you see?
I can't look down and turn my head, and I see only what's in front of my faceplate. Well, I'm revolving slowly as I come down. Water's clear. All around me is that pretty blue light. Uh-oh. A few fish. Nothing large enough to be dangerous yet. The conditions are as good. What's my depth now?
He wants his depth.
Here's 28 fathoms. Now.
28, Travis.
Well, slow my descent. Slow it.
Slow his descent.
Right. I can see coral now. There's great formations of it stretching away from me.
Buildings? The warehouses?
Yes. Yes, buildings. Roofs. Windows. There's a street. Yeah. Must be a street in front of me. And there's storehouses.
He's hit it. Storehouses.
We've hit it. Do you hear that, mate?
Hey, I hear it.
We've hit it. No, I'm on the bottom. I'm on the bottom. All right. It's sand. It's good footing. I'm moving forward. Yeah, I'll need plenty of slack in both my lines.
You need slack.
He's getting it. The winch is rolling. There's no trouble yet. Moving toward the nearest one. It's encrusted with coral. It's a building. Big one. There's a wide opening. That lets enough light in. Hey, it's a storehouse. I need the loading platform.
He wants a loading platform.
What?
The loading platform, you jerk! We were too busy on deck for a while to really digest what was happening. Even after the loading platform broke through the surface and we saw the single rotting chest on it, it was too much like a scene in a B movie to believe. But then we pried it open. Lying in rows were small leather bags covered with a slimy coral crust. We took one out. It crumbled, and from it maybe 50 metal coins spilled onto the deck. They were dirty brown, but when they were scratched, bright, clean gold showed through. By the time Travis was aboard and out of his suit, the first shock of success had passed, and we were calm enough to have a drink.
Well, Mr. Travis, sit down and rest. You are the hero of the day. I get you here, but you load on the gold, huh?
Yeah.
Here's a drink, Travis. You've earned it.
Thanks. I can use it. Well, what do you think of your first day of salvage operation?
Hmm? Brother, I've won some pots in my day, but when those coins rolled out, that topped everything.
Yeah, I think we're off to a good start. How many more chests are down there?
Oh, I don't know yet. I only moved 10 or 15 feet into the building. I saw three or four more.
Yeah. What do you think they bring back in the States?
Well, if they're all like this one, $35,000, $40,000 apiece.
Yeah, we've hit it all right. How many trips down can you make?
In this weather, two in the morning, two in the afternoon. That gives me about, 12 minutes on the bottom each descent.
$35,000 or $40,000 a dive? Hey, that's going to add up.
No, don't spend it yet, Danny. It may turn into more than just going down, coming up. Things can happen down there. This is the first time I've worked buildings, and I know that sunken hulls can lie there for a couple of three centuries without moving, even in the current. But let a diver put his foot in the wrong plank and something on the other end of the ship gives way. You never know. So let's count what we got today and see if our luck holds tomorrow.
Our luck did hold, not only the next morning and afternoon, but the day after and the 2 days after that. One chest per dive, four dives per day. An average of $140,000 worth of loot a day came off the bottom. We had $560,000 in the hold.
I don't know when the thought first nibbled at me. I tried to blame it on the idea that I didn't trust Captain Matson, but that wasn't it. Travis had planted it himself when he reminded me that you never knew what to expect 30 fathoms below. The rest of it was based on the fact that any hunk of dough looks three times smaller when it's split three ways.
In just a moment, we will return you to the second act of Escape. But first, this Saturday night, CBS's Gangbusters program brings you the case of the boiled booster. Not rooster, booster. The case of the boiled booster. And since Gangbusters does only authentic police cases, who are we to question the title? Well, somebody did ask a question, and it's a case straight out of the New York City police files. And a house gets lost, among other things. Gangbusters is heard every Saturday on most of these same CBS stations. So be listening for the case of the boiled booster this Saturday. And now we return you to Escape.
It went on like that day after day. Those chests coming up until there was enough treasure aboard that schooner to drive any man half out of his head. We were isolated out there. The island Jamaica was just a blur off our bow. The only ships we saw were cruise liners way out on the horizon. The more I thought about it, the stronger my hunch got. The way my luck was running, I could work it out so there wouldn't have to be a three-way split of those chests. Travis was easy. He'd just stay down there. Captain Matson and McGraw, the mate, well, they took a little more thought. But with that fortune at stake, what else was there to think about?
Danny! Hey, Danny, you deaf? Hey, Danny.
Oh, yeah, Skipper, what'll it be?
You and your dreaming, Danny. Sometimes it's not so good to spend so much time in the future. Come on, give us a hand. Another chest is coming up.
Another chest? You know this thing could go too far? Well, another day, another $140,000.
Gentlemen, I think tomorrow's the last one.
Yes, I was going to ask how long my food stores are running short.
Well, I've had to move as far into that building as I want to move. And that roof I've been working under is heavy with coral growth, and it's not held by nails anymore. They're gone. It's held by balance, and I don't want to upset it.
I don't blame you, Travis. Tell me, what do you say we got in the hold now?
Well over 900,000. There haven't been many salvage operations that have topped that.
Over 300,000 apiece, huh? Yeah, those are good wages. Why bother with another dive?
Hey, Skipper, don't get so rich that you turn up your nose at a few hundred grand. Travis wants to give it another try, more power to him.
That's up to him.
Well, to be honest with you, I've had enough of it. I'm going to be dreaming about those sagging walls and that blue light for weeks to come, and I hate to push my luck too far. Well, I'll make one more descent in the morning, and then I think we should start back.
I think so, too.
Danny?
Well, you're the boss, Travis. That's good enough for me. That was after evening chow. I stretched out in my cabin, but I didn't sleep. I lay awake planning. I was still awake when the mate came off watch.
Hey, Danny. Wake up. Come on. It's midnight.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, McGraw. You can turn in.
Yeah. Here. Keys are on the table.
There were three keys on that ring we anchor watches carried every night. One to the gear locker in case we needed tools. One to the lamp locker in case we needed a light. A third had been added when the treasure started to pile up. He had opened the gun locker.
Outside on the deck, I leaned
my elbows on the rail, watched the phosphorescence rippling back from the side of the boat, and lined up the next detail. The gun locker had been equipped to take care of any possible attack, so it was an arsenal. What I needed was a Thompson submachine gun. But I wasn't about to overplay my hand by taking it out of the locker. Somebody would have noticed that. I just slipped in and unlocked the case so I could get it when the time came. I didn't think anybody'd notice that, and I was right.
What's my depth now, Danny?
Hold on. He wants his depth, Skipper.
Here's 19 fathoms. Now.
19, Travis.
Hey, look, my air is inadequate for the speed of my descent. Tell him to slow me down or increase my air pressure.
Check.
He says slow him down or give him some more air pressure, Skipper.
We'll slow him down.
You're slowing down, Travis.
Thanks, Danny. I guess everybody topside is in as big a hurry as I am to get away from this place.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know, as long as I've been diving, I've never been able to control my imagination. After so many descents, I always start telling myself, Travis, that should be the last one. You've had no trouble. From now on, the law of averages working against you.
Yeah, I can see what you mean.
Yeah. The more easy descents I make, the less I want to make the next one. My air is adequate now. I'm getting plenty.
I had a crazy flash thought that Travis knew what I was up to and had something up his sleeve.
You know,
I got rid of it. He couldn't have known. If he had, he wouldn't have gone down. Hardly heard him talking. With him submerged, it was time for me to get into action. It was five steps to the door that would take me to the gun locker. With the Thompson, I'd force Matson, the rest of the fellas into their cabins. Then the chest would go into the lifeboat. And the stern anchor line we cut, the ship pulled into that reef point it was moored to, and the coral would rip the bottom out of it. The only thing left would be the lifeboat full of loot, with me in it. I didn't see how any court any place could prove it wasn't an accident. I took the intercom set off my head. Matson and the mate had their heads together near the winch.
Danny, where you going?
In to get a drink of water.
Don't do it, Danny. Stay where you are.
Hey, what the devil's the matter with you? What's a gun for? I haven't done anything.
The gun is so you won't do anything. McGraw!
I said,
cut the winch. Time to move. Get below and open the valves. I'll take care of Danny.
Oh, no, you won't.
Danny! Come out on deck, Danny. Make it easy. If you play along, maybe you'll get out of this. You coming out, Danny?
What's the game?
The partnership was too big, Danny. I told you you'd dream too much.
What? You and McGraw?
Make it easy, Danny. Come on out or you go down with the ship anyway. Come on, maybe we deal you in.
All right, Skipper. I'll play along with you.
That's right, Danny. Use your head.
Sure. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing! Using my head!
I want to talk to you.
Where are you, McGraw?
I'm behind cover. Now listen to me. I want you to know that this was none of my idea. The captain made the plan and forced me into it. Now he's gone, I'll side in with you and Travis.
Sure.
Fortune like this has driven guys crazy before, but let you and me hang on to our senses. All the valves are open below decks. The ship's going down. Let's get the treasure into the lifeboat while we got time.
All right, McGraw. Let me hear you toss your gun on the deck, and I'll know you're leveling with me.
Sure, Danny. There it is.
I'm in the main passageway. Come on.
I swear I'm telling you the truth, Danny. He forced me into this. But you entrapped... Danny! Now, don't!
I got plans of my own for this stuff, McGraw, and you aren't in them. Nobody is.
Danny! You're going
to... Maybe he was right. Maybe that treasure was driving me crazy. It was like I was rushing downhill and couldn't stop, just like I didn't seem to be able to stop the tunnel after I started screaming. After McGraw was gone, I went over to the main hold and tore the canvas off the hatch. I could hear the water rushing through the valves he'd opened, and it was telling me I'd have to hurry if I wanted to get those chests. I went over to the lifeboat hanging in his davit. No. No! 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 That's when my luck, my plans, my dreams, everything was blasted. The lifeboat, it was ripped and useless. I'd gone crazy with that submachine gun. It was peppered with bullet holes. One blasted, cut out one of the lines, and it crashed to the deck and smashed the bow. It wouldn't have stayed afloat empty. $900,000 aboard, and there was no way to save it. The schooner had already started to list. I had to think of saving myself.
Travis. Travis, are you all right?
I'm all right.
There's been trouble up here.
Yes, I know.
Matson and McGraw tried to pirate the treasure. I managed to stop them. But they've scuttled the ship.
He's taking water?
Yeah. Yeah, how fast can you come up? You've been down there a little over 20 minutes.
Raise me at regular speed, then. Never mind tending my lines. Get the winch moving, and then get below. See what can be done about stopping the water.
Okay, Travis. I'll be glad to get you up here. We're in a mess, believe me. I did what he told me. I went below. But it didn't take long to see there was nothing to do down there the way the water was pouring in. I spent my time working out a story for Travis that would save my hide and give me another chance at that treasure. It took 30 minutes to get him aboard and out of his suit. By that time, the schooner was starting to settle by the stern.
There's no time to talk about it now, Danny. I can see you have plenty of trouble.
Well, there wasn't much I could do but kill him.
Naturally, Danny.
All those chests going back to the bottom. How can you tell about guys like Matson and McGraw?
I don't know, Danny. Treasure hunting does strange things to people.
But we're coming back after it, aren't we? I can raise some more dough. We aren't giving up, are we?
I'm coming back, Danny. But you aren't.
What's that supposed to mean?
You left the intercom system open. I heard what you told McGraw before you killed him about your plans.
That's too bad, Travis.
Oh, no. Don't try it, Danny. Guns won't help you now. The lifeboat's gone. You're the sailor who can't swim, remember? You'd never make it by yourself, but I can get you ashore. And once I do, I've got to turn you in. So, you've got a choice. Come with me, or stay with the ship. Your choice, Danny. Don't be too slow in deciding.
I went with him. Hanging onto what was left of the lifeboat, we watched the rest of it from 50 yards away. Looked like the schooner just got tired of fighting the water. She lifted her bow like for a last look around, and rolled over and went out of sight. $900,000. But that wasn't the only fortune that was sinking. Danny Quinn's was on the way down, too. I was fresh out of luck.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson. Tonight we have presented Port Royal by Gil Dowd, suggested by Lieutenant Harry Riesberg's book, I Dive for Treasure. Featured in the cast were Charles McGraw as Danny Quinn, John Daner as Fletcher Travis, and Bill Conrad as Captain Matson. Also heard were Dee Tatum, Paul Frees, and Ted DiCorsia. Special music was arranged and conducted by Del Castillo. Next week...
You are imprisoned in a lonely lighthouse off the steaming jungle coastline of French Guiana. Your comrades, a maniac and a coward. Your captors, an army of gigantic, hunger-maddened rats.
Next week, in response to many hundreds of requests, we will again present one of the most unforgettable and terrifying of all escape stories, Three Skeleton Key. Goodbye, then, until this same time next week, when once again we offer you Escape. Through field workers stationed with our troops in this country and across the world, the American Red Cross helps the lonely soldier, the Marine anxious about his sick wife at home, the sailor with a dying mother 3,000 miles away. Last year, more than 750,000 men in service were helped in family, welfare, and recreational problems by American Red Cross workers. Give to the Red Cross workers. Give to the Red Cross generously this month. This is CBS, where you meet Gene Autry every Saturday night, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Escape, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 10th of March, 1950 on CBS. And so closes this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.